Welcome to What Is It About the Weather, where once a week we get together and explore the many ways that weather is intertwined into our everyday lives. Sometimes pretty obvious, right? Sometimes a bit more subtle. I'm your host, Mark Chelanek, and this week we're going to be talking about what has weather got to do with my insurance? Now, let me say, as always, I hope you've had an interesting and enjoyable intertwined weather week. Maybe you learned something. Maybe you didn't. Maybe you just enjoyed the weather, for that matter. I know for me, it was all about winter. Okay, maybe not really, but it was good. It's feeling like fall where I am, which is a nice thing. It's good to get to that change of season that I like. But the National Weather Service officially announced their winter weather simplification project. Now, back in the spring, about the time that the podcast officially became a Weather Ready Nation ambassador, you probably heard me mention some links where you had an opportunity to go and provide input if you were so inclined. And this was one of the things. They were wrapping it up around that time, and the results are out. And the short answer is, you know, if you're used to very detailed winter weather information, it'll still be there. You're going to have to read a little bit more to get to that. But if you like simple things like, hey, there's some winter weather head your way, and for you in this region, you probably know what that means, and you in that region, you probably know what that means, because it's going to be different in Syracuse, New York versus Atlanta, Georgia, as an example. But the overarching warning is going to be very similar in both of those cases. And then you'll have to get into the details to get a little more information. But no doubt, wherever you're getting your weather forecast from, that'll have some of that information. So I think it's a good thing. It makes it a little easier to understand what's going on instead of being hit with a warning that doesn't make sense to you. But also do keep in mind, if you're a traveler and you're not familiar with the weather where you're going, you know, just be cognizant that you might want to understand what that means if it confronts you. Also had to deal with midterms this week. Tried to do something a little different with my students. Gave them some scenarios to think through, to insert themselves into. We'll see how they did. They did that this morning, the morning that I'm recording this thing. Any case, let's get to today's main topic. Now, I've talked many times in the past, and at some point, as I've mentioned, I really want to get to where, again, not every episode, but maybe one out of four episodes, we interview somebody, right? And part of those interviews are going to be looking at specific industries that are heavily influenced by weather, and as you probably figured out by now, that's just about everything, right? But explore with somebody who either forecasts for that industry, or maybe uses a lot of the information that is contained in a weather forecast for what they do. But before we do that, I thought it'd be good to start introducing you to some of these industries a little more specifically. You know, we've been talking about a lot of topics, gotten into some things that are more everyday life, but you've heard me mention the weather enterprise, and it's huge. So there's people that sell to specific industries. There's people, like I said, that forecast for specific industries. And I thought you might like to learn something about them. And so we're going to start with insurance. And yeah, we're starting with insurance because in a year like this, right, it's very hard to escape the headlines. They've been all over the place. Billions or tens of billions per disaster or per location even. You know, whether it's been hurricanes or floods, or, you know, we're coming off a season with some drought. And even this year, we've had a lot of crop failures, not just in the U.S., where we had like a late freeze in the Southeast that impacted a lot of things. And I watched that happen. You know, I watched what that meant for the fruit that I'm used to, for instance, in the end of summertime. But we saw this in other places, too, like Europe, where the winter patterns certainly impacted crops. So there's never a shortage, right? Never a shortage of ways that weather impacts our lives. But what you got to keep in mind is for a lot of these things, people are insured, right? Or are they? And that's where it gets tricky. So we track all this stuff. We hear these stories. NOAA even has an official site, and I'll put a link in the show notes for this one. You know, sometimes, and in this episode, we're going to refer to a little more commercial information, but I do try to kind of give you what I would consider theoretically a non-biased source, in that it's, you know, an agency that's putting it together. So NOAA tracks these big billion-dollar events for here in the U.S., and there are other groups that do it worldwide. I remember when I was back in grad school and doing some stuff related to hurricanes that we used such a data set. And the good news is they're becoming more readily available, right? So it's a little easier for people like you and me just to go see the information. And it's, you know, there's some infographics. It's a big trend, right? So we're seeing more visualization of that data, and that's a good thing. But I'm always a little bit surprised when I go and look at this stuff that maybe it's not what I expected, right? You know, what comes to your mind when you think of weather and insurance? Well, like I said, in a year like this, it may be that hurricane image. Or maybe if you're in a region with tornadoes, it's those sort of events. But what about cars, right? I mean, what's the first thing that comes to mind with car insurance? You're thinking about your car being in an accident. Or you're thinking about some ambulance chasing lawyer ad who's trying to get you to sue somebody else because you didn't get your medical bills paid or whatever it might be, right? So a lot of that advertising we see. But I have to correct myself. You know, I've gone on and I've done statistics before where we've talked about where most of the deaths come from weather-related events. And I've always talked about heat and how it kind of sneaks up on you. But if you take all those combined, heat and tornadoes and lightning, et cetera, even hurricanes, put them all together, you do not even reach the number of weather-related car deaths that occur in each year. So actually, cars are the number one weather killer. Interesting sort of thing. And I never really thought about it from that perspective. So even car insurance, and again, our instinct is to think about accidents, but oddly enough, my first kind of weather-related insurance claim was from weather, but it was directly from weather. It was from hail damage of a car. As I sat and ate dinner and watched the hail beat down, and then I got out and saw what it did to my car. And then you go to homeowners, right? You know, that's the next, for all of us. And again, I'm trying to make this relatable because there's this whole piece of insurance, and we're going to talk about that some, that's more industry related that a lot of us just don't see. But certainly if you own a vehicle, you've probably thought about it. And if you own a home or even rent a home, a lot of times with renter's insurance, and I realize it's a little different here in the U.S. than maybe other places around the world. But home insurance or renter's insurance or auto insurance is not unique by any means to the U.S. So hopefully, wherever you are, you can kind of translate it and relate it a little bit, because I know the policies are going to be a little different. But even with homeowners here in the U.S., you know, your first instinct is theft. That's kind of how it's always promoted, is, you know, someone's going to get in your home and get your stuff. And then the damage thing comes about, but a lot of times it's like your neighbor cut down a tree and it landed on your house. They don't focus on the weather. But a good two-thirds or even more, the statistics were a little tricky that I was working with, because they group things together like water damage and flooding. And, you know, water damage could come from broken pipes, but more often water damage is probably weather-related. And the same with fire and lightning are grouped together because it does similar damage. And my speculation is there's a lot of the fire numbers that are just fires, not necessarily induced by lightning. But no matter how you do it, the numbers come out to about two-thirds, it may be more. And the other thing I guess I should say in all this is I should give a disclaimer that I have family that's in the insurance industry. I have it in that's even in risk management. You may not, you know, directly consider that insurance, but they're all related. And I know people that work in this industry, and I know they'll let me know if I get things wrong. So hopefully if I misstate anything, we can get corrected. And even the actuarial sciences, right? The math part of it. I know people that do that. We've got a listener that I know has been in that for most of their career. I can't speak for all of it. So if I've said something wrong, I'm sure they'll let me know. But back to where I was. So two-thirds, if not more, of homeowners' losses for the insurance companies come from weather-related events. All right. So my background with this, and I'm going to start there, but I'm going to, you know, as always, I want this to be a learning exercise. So I'll give you a little background on the industry more side of it versus the, you know, necessarily touching us as individual consumers. But my background really comes into it from hurricanes, right? And the work that I did there with hurricane forecasting, but also we worked with some companies in understanding how they could better use hurricane forecast in their catastrophe models and in updating these things. Because sometimes even policies and how they're issued once certain weather events are going on is different than when weather events aren't going on. And hurricanes is one of those sort of things. And I even came across an article got sent to me this week that even talked about how we should be looking at the risk even differently than this economic risk that we've looked at traditionally. But really this catastrophe model is where, you know, I kind of got attached to it. It's an industry that was kind of born in the 80s. This was something that needed a lot of computing power. And it certainly has evolved significantly. And it was really started by a company called AIR. And AIR, as you would expect it to be spelled, A-I-R, that is now part of Verisk, I think. Still its own thing. But that's, they were kind of the birthers, if you will, of catastrophe modeling. And what catastrophe modeling is really trying to do is understand the risk exposure for different companies, for different locations, for future dates. So sometimes they're looking really far in the future. Sometimes they're just trying to understand in the closer time. If you've got an area, let's take an area like Miami as an example in Florida, or any of these island areas that we've seen hit this year with hurricanes. Population patterns change a lot of times between the major events. Miami, as an example, its last big kind of noteworthy event was Hurricane Andrew back in the 80s. So it had been a while. And here you got this big storm coming through and the population has boomed and the building along the coast has changed. And so the catastrophe modeling is trying to understand what the risk exposure is with all these changes that have taken place. And what they try to recognize is, you know, our natural tendency is to look at history, right? And say, okay, this is what it was like last time. This is what it's going to be like in the future. But what catastrophe modeling also tries to do is incorporate all these changes that are going on, right? Whether it's in the natural world or in the man-made world, what have we done? For instance, we've changed the structure. Or in Atlanta, for instance, where I am, one of the things that we constantly talk about is how all the paving that we're doing, you know, has changed the drainage structure and the impacts that that might have. So this is what the catastrophe modeling gets into, right? But there's this whole other side to it that I'm not as familiar with. So we're going to dive into it a little bit together and see if we can't get a deeper understanding. Now, of course, when I was looking in all this, you got to think about there's different types of companies, right? There's companies that are trying to protect themselves, the insurance companies. And I don't really have that perspective. So like I said, I think that's the type of person we'll interview is somebody on that side of the equation. And again, if you have an idea or a suggestion of somebody, feel free to let me know. Even if it's you, if you want to come on and be interviewed, let me know. But I'm going to speak at it from more of what I would call the provider side. All right, those of us who provide weather information or weather-based information. Now, I'm going to start with an obvious front runner, which is somebody that, you know, we've talked about before, which is IBM. Now, this would have been somebody like WSI before IBM acquired them. But they're trying to provide information, and they've done this nice, again, talking about infographics, and I'll put a link in the show notes because it was a nice overview. It gets into, and it is a little salesy about how big the losses are each year related to weather. And they're speaking more in general terms than necessarily about the insurance industry, but they're talking about how you can kind of really think about the cycle, and we all deal with cycles, right? That insurance companies are dealing with. Now, this is the people that would specifically, or I'm thinking about it in this context, it's a little broader than this, that would sell us policies. Right here in the U.S., that might be somebody like State Farm or Allstate or Farmers or whatever your company is that you've bought insurance products from. And what IBM is trying to say in this infographic is, listen, we've got lots more data than we used to ever have, right? We can now analyze it in ways we've never looked at before. And so you can be more effective as an insurance company with this type of information at your fingertips. And there's really, you know, kind of three different phases, right? There's the before. Alerting clients, even telling your clients, hey, there's a weather event coming your way. You know, you might not want to have your car in the driveway if you can put it in the garage, just to be safe. You might not want to be out on the road in some of these severe events. So it's alerting, it's advising, it's even planning. So if you know you've got these high profile, high impact events, what you might want to do as an insurance company, especially a larger company that might reallocate assets to help in high profile situations like, you know, dealing with aftermath of a hurricane. They might have these teams that go into cities and help with the claim adjusting. And it's all that planning that goes in ahead of time. Then it's really the during of the event. So this weather event comes through. How are you responding to your clients efficiently? How are you avoiding fraud? And I know we all like to think that, you know, everybody's up and up, but insurance fraud's a huge deal. And trust me, when you've got it and it's going on, that impacts those of us who pay for insurance and aren't committing fraud. And it's not always, let's put it this way. Sometimes the person with the policy is a victim on, can be a victim on both sides, I guess, is, you know, you're paying higher rates because of fraud, but you may not realize you're committing fraud. Some contractor comes in, knocks at your door after an event, says, oh, I can get all that covered by insurance. And you go, okay, sounds good. But what may happen is they may do work that had nothing to do with the insurance event. And yes, we all know that we're, you know, part of this big cycle. And we all think, oh, my little white lie isn't going to matter, but little white lies make bigger lies. And I, you know, I'm not here to preach morals, but just know that, you know, we're all guilty at times of fudging things. I've talked about fudging before, even with the weather models, right? But sometimes it's more obvious than others. And so some of these tools they can have that have history of the weather event that just went through, the type of damage that would be expected, gives those insurance adjusters the ability to say, yeah, that claim's legitimate, because they're also going to recognize that, hey, I don't necessarily have time to go out and check every one of these things. And if it's a reasonable claim within that context, then yes, it's good to go, sort of thing. And then, of course, there's the afterward, because after each of these events, after all the claims have been done and, you know, you look at the event, then it gets into this catastrophe modeling again. But also, you know, what's your risk exposure as an insurance company? What does your pricing need to be depending on where you are? Because, for instance, what my pricing for insurance might be should take into account the weather where I'm at versus somebody that lives in a part of the country that never gets severe weather, right? So it helps, I guess, a good way to think about it is it allows you to make more granular decisions. And I was thinking about this when we were dealing with Hurricane Irma in our area, and there was these maps online to look at things, how hard it was to recover from a similar event just 20 years ago before the internet. I know the internet's been around a little longer than that, but just imagine everybody had to call you on the phone, and maybe they didn't even have phone service to call you about an outage, right? And how difficult that made response times, allocating resources. Now, that's more on the power side, but it's the same on the insurance side. Where do my people need to be in helping people recover? Because trust me, those insurance companies want you to be happy. Yeah, there's going to be a chance that they're going to deny a claim or something. That's always a possibility. But the quicker they can get to you when you're having trouble, the very trouble that you bought the insurance for, the more likely you're going to be a happy customer and recommend to other people what they have to offer to you. So in a broad sense, that's kind of what this infographic goes over, is, you know, thinking about how weather products can help in those different stages. Now, I did have a quick laugh because there's other companies, of course, that I looked at in this. One of them was another AIR, A-E-R, which is more of an acronym. The other AIR may be an acronym. I honestly don't know. But this one stands for Atmospheric and Environmental Research, I think, but also part of VERRisk, which I thought was kind of interesting. But what I noticed, and it was them and another company called Weather Analytics, and these were just a couple that came up in my initial search. Both names I recognize and I know, okay, they're companies I'm familiar with. But what I found funny was their product names. We are into single word names. I clearly need to change the name of this podcast. It can no longer be "What Is It About the Weather?" It needs to be or just "Weather" or something, because the product names were things like Benchmark, Respond, Location, Gauge, Beacon, Dexter. You know, all these single words that are supposed to invoke a visualization for you. And some of them worked pretty well. I mean, I understood what most of them did, or at least I did after I went and read what they were. But you can see these individual companies are providing, and each one of them thinks a little differently, whereas I think of IBM traditionally in the underlying business there as being more the weather data, all right? And less about that next phase, which is helping you in the decision process, but that's part of what they're talking about doing with their offering. Whereas these other companies are a little more focused, and you can get to that with their parent company that owns them, a little more focused on how do I take this information, right, and turn it into something that you can act upon. I mean, that's what everything's about now. It's this actionable information, decision support sort of thing. So there's lots of companies, some with a deeper weather understanding, some with more of that, maybe that insurance background or risk management background. But they're doing what I've talked about before, which is more of this combining, more of moving to that next stage, which is, okay, we've got the knowledge to see this basic underlying weather information. Now let's help it translate into something more useful that other people can act upon. I don't know. Interesting stuff. Interesting stuff. But how does that impact you, okay? And like I said, you could see through that cycle maybe some different ways in your mind. And it also has to do with where you're located. So some areas, like here in the U.S., if you're in a floodplain or a flood-prone zone, there is actually a national flood insurance program. Whereas if you're not, if you want flood insurance, you still have to quite often buy it as a separate policy. Maybe not. But like I know a meteorologist here in Atlanta that wanted flood insurance because they're kind of near a creek, but they're not really in the high-profile flood zone. And it was really difficult for them. Now, they finally got it done, I think. But, you know, even non-weather things like earthquakes. Out in California here, you might have to have a different policy for earthquakes. And again, sometimes you see these things that are brought under governmental controls, because the idea there is let's take out the idea of it's a for-profit, but we still need to look at risk exposure. And we know that if one year LA has an earthquake, it's probably not going to be the same year that San Francisco has an earthquake, and I'm just throwing out an example here, or Alaska or somewhere else. So you're trying to, as with always with risk, you're trying to average out these things. You know, the goal is to come up with numbers that allow you to absorb losses in certain areas one year and others in other years, but that over time, you know, maybe some years you have more losses and other years less. In time, it all averages out. But it might be even on auto. So auto in certain areas may have restrictions that you don't have in other areas. So it can be very area dependent. And that's true with, you know, other things about auto too. If you're in a higher theft area, then yeah, that theft element is going to come into play. So the key, I guess, with all this stuff is when you think about how weather impacts your insurance, just make sure to understand your policy and what it really covers. And understand the area where you are. And this is particularly important, of course, if you move, right? You may have come from an area where certain things are in your policy, or maybe you didn't even understand your policy, but take the time. You know, I'm married to somebody who lives in the fine print, right? She always takes the time to read the contracts and the fine print to make sure that, you know, we're not signing something we shouldn't sign. She's much better at that than I am. But I would tell you, you know, when you're buying an insurance policy, that might be the time that you take to read the fine print and just make sure that you're not exposed in some area that has you concerned. You know, as with everything we buy, anytime you buy insurance, a lot of times you're buying for what you consider you need it for. Maybe you only want something that is for worst case types of things. You know, everything's lost, and otherwise you're going to take the risk. But other times, maybe you're buying it because you don't want to have that risk exposure. You know, it's about your risk aversion as well, certainly. So just know what your weather risks are, where you are. Think about it. You know, lake effect snow's not big for me in Atlanta, but it might be in, like I said, in Syracuse, New York. And we had a house that had a flat roof for all things. And that could have caused real problems. Didn't, but it was something I needed to think about when I bought an insurance policy. Don't think about it exclusively with this stuff, though. If you want to, you know, go out and do some Google searches on this topic, look at event weather protection. Or even think, you know, that's kind of more of an industrial thing. But, you know, it's an interesting thing that when you see these big events, a lot of times that are going on, or amusement parks, they have disruption insurance, basically. And weather is a big component of that. So it's something you can read about if you want to. You as an individual, next time you're considering a trip and you're looking at trip insurance, that might be something where you want to pay attention to what the weather coverage is, because usually there's some in there, but as an example, quite often it does not cover hurricanes. All things to read about and consider. And just some interesting stuff to read about if you want to, and this connection. All right. Enough about insurance and the weather connection to insurance. You know, with this hurricane season, I've seen more stories about, some of the stuff just, I just, you know, some days I got to just, no, click, move on. You got to be kidding me, move on. But I saw one that had to do with this idea that's being put forth that the officials in Houston knew the flooding was going to be as bad as it was and lied to protect people, and how that was even okay from this writer's perspective. And I've seen it all, and I just, with all this stuff, people always look for multiple sources. If you really hear something scandalous, I know that, you know, people want to break stories, news organizations want to break stories and all that stuff, but just don't jump on it. You know, give it some time. Make sure there's something more there before you start Facebooking it or tweeting it to everybody. Give it time. Let it mull it over a little bit, sleep on it, and see if there's anything new that's breaking the next day. Because trust me, other news agencies also see what that one agency wrote and will go try to duplicate that to, you know, show that they are on top of it too, if it's real. So I have a question for you this week. So I was having lunch with a friend of mine who listens to the podcast, and we were talking about listening to podcasts at accelerated speeds, and he told me that he does listen to this podcast at a faster speed. I don't remember if he said it was like 1.5 times or 2 times, and I've never really done that much. I've done it some recently, and I find it, I don't know, it takes me out of the podcast, but I understand why people do it. I do get it. And so I'm very tempted to do a Woody Woodpecker laugh just to throw him off the edge, because at 2 times already a really fast chimey thing, it would probably make him want to destroy his headbuds. But I won't do that to him. But let me know. I am curious. So if you listen to podcast at anything besides normal speed, let me know. I'm curious what you think, especially if you listen to this podcast, or why maybe you do or don't listen to this podcast at an advanced speed, but maybe you listen to others, so I can get a sense of that. You can hit me up with that stuff at whatisitaboutheweather or at gmail.com. whatisitaboutheweather@gmail.com or whatisitaboutheweather.com/contact. All right. So this last couple of weeks, we've talked about it. I tried to run not quite as long last week, and I don't think I ran quite as long, but I've been trying to get it back to this 30-minute range, and I think we're going to get there this week. But I also want to take a moment to say thank you to all of you who support the podcast in the various ways that you do. Rate, share, validate, and pledge. You know the system that I've been talking about for a while. I've given you a few weeks off of not talking about it. Whether it's rating us on iTunes so that people discover us, whether it's sharing it, and that's huge, right? Telling other people about it. It's still probably the most important thing that you do, and making sure that we get new listeners, because new listeners help. Because the other thing new listeners do is they also tend to respond and give you feedback. Validate, that's your turn to provide feedback. Telling us what you like, what you don't like. Show ideas. Interview people ideas. Like I said, I hope to start getting in that. It may not be October, maybe November, December before that gets underway. But that is the plan. So if you have people that you think would be good to interview, let me know, and I'll try to work that out. And pledge. For those of you who are supporting us on Patreon, thank you. For those that have not but are considering it, well, we would welcome you to do that. Or if you want to do PayPal, that option is there as well. What is it about theweather.com/support? All those things. So with all this insurance knowledge in your head and all the different things that we've talked about today, hopefully it's been a reminder that there's much more to weather than the weather itself.
This is Two White Sofa Production.
We're tired of hearing our uncle grovel, so please support him on patreon.com/weather.